Hi, this is Steve Nerlich.
Why cheap astronomy?
Yeah, why? And this is Dear Cheap Astronomy, episode 145, Finding a Way Through. Life is just full of problems, as is astronomy and space science. You could just lie down in the middle of the road and let it all run over you, or you could find a way through. It might not be an intuitive method or an elegant solution, but if it works, it works. For example, Dear Cheap Astronomy, please offer some examples of gravity assist maneuvers. A gravity assist maneuver involves your spacecraft undertaking a hyperbolic trajectory with respect to a large mass, generally a planet. Hyperbolic means it's going to go into the planet's gravitational field with a trajectory and speed that ensures it will also leave that gravitational field again, so essentially it dips in and then out again. If it's a passive gravity assist maneuver with no thrusters fired, then someone on the planet would see your spacecraft gain a little acceleration as it enters the planet's gravitational field, but then get slowed down again as it exits the gravitational field. Hence, whatever speed you had on approaching the planet is the same speed you'll have on leaving the planet. So acceleration due to gravity plays no real part in a gravity assist maneuver. What matters is that during the manoeuvre, you're interacting with a large mass that is itself moving quite fast. So essentially, during the manoeuvre, your spacecraft is grabbing onto that fast-moving object for a short period and then letting go again. So, while from someone on the planet's perspective, nothing really happens, from an external observer's perspective, the spacecraft's velocity, that is, its speed and its direction, changes markedly, where it might not only be sped up, but also flung in a totally different direction to where it was going before it interacted with the planet. So, for example, the Cassini mission to Saturn left Earth with Earth's orbital velocity around the Sun of about 30 kilometers a second, then it fell towards the Sun and flew by Venus, which has an orbital velocity of 35 kilometers a second. So the combined effect of the fall towards the Sun and the flyby of Venus gave the spacecraft a velocity of 40 kilometers a second. Then it swung out and back again, getting another kick from Venus, and then it flew by Earth for another small kick and a trajectory change, which flung it right out to Jupiter. Since this was climbing the Sun's gravity well, its remaining speed was only 10 kilometers a second when it flew by Jupiter, which has an orbital velocity of 13 kilometers a second, so the spacecraft got another small speed increase and also a useful trajectory change to put it on an intercept course with Saturn. The Parker Solar Probe had a different problem to contend with. To get into a close solar orbit, it had to slow down, which it managed by positioning itself in front of Venus on a flyby. This is probably best explained by the probe actually giving Venus a gravity assist. So as it streaked past Venus, Venus briefly grabbed onto it and then let go, the planet speeding itself up by a minute fraction and consequently slowing the spacecraft down. The Parker probe has done 6 such Venus flybys, and the 7th and final one was on the 6th of December 2024, which has now put it on an orbit where its closest approach to the Sun is due on the 24th of December 2024. On that day, it will be out of contact with Earth, so everyone will be hanging out to hopefully hear its beacon tone on the 27th of December, which will indicate it survived that close pass. The probe will then stay on that close solar orbit for the rest of the mission. Despite achieving this closer solar orbit through losing momentum energy, we know from Kepler's laws of planetary motion that an object that is in a close orbit actually moves a lot faster than an object in a distant orbit. So, even though the Parker probe has had to repeatedly slow itself down to achieve its close solar orbit, it is set to become the fastest ever human-made object. Although it actually achieved this fastest ever status in 2018, it's just been breaking its own record ever since. So, in 2025, the Parker Solar Probe will approach a speed of 700,000 kilometers an hour, which is about 190 kilometers a second, or about 0.06% of the speed of light at its periapsis. Not too shabby. Even at that speed, it will take the probe 88 days to do a full orbit of the Sun, which is actually the same orbital period that Mercury has, but the Parker probe is on a much more elliptical orbit than Mercury, where its apoapsis is out near Venus's orbit, and its periapsis will be just under 7 million kilometers from the Sun's surface. In comparison, Mercury never gets closer than 46 kilometers from the Sun. So, it's a pretty cool mission that will get pretty hot.
This is the middle bit.
Gravity Assist is an unexpected solution to exploring the solar system. But it does turn out that sometimes the best way to get to one planet is to fly by another planet, or planets, several times over. Who would have thought? But there it is. So now, let's look at another well-known problem in astronomy and space science. Dear Cheap Astronomy, what is your response to the Fermi paradox? The Fermi paradox is usually just paraphrased as, "Where are all the aliens?" But the actual paradox involves it seeming inconceivable that we could be the only technologically based civilization around that is able to transmit messages and send spacecraft out from our planet. But at the same time, here we are, looking out and listening out for signs of anyone else having figured out the secret of banging the rocks together. And, so far, zip. But before we get too pessimistic, let's consider that to whatever extent we are an example of an advanced civilization, we aren't actually all that noisy. Although we have been broadcasting radio and TV signals for around 100 years now, and hence those signals have spread out for 100 light years in all directions, their signal strength has attenuated over distance by the inverse square law. It's unlikely our current technology would be able to detect our own radio transmissions from just 4 light years away, say from Proxima Centauri, which is the closest star to our Sun. We might manage to detect our very loudest broadcasts, which to date have been in radar rather than radio, but already modern broad frequency radar is much harder to detect than the blaring narrow frequency radar we used in the 20th century. Similarly, our civilization is becoming increasingly radio quiet as we steadily shift away from radio and TV broadcasting towards cable and fiber-based comms. So it seems after a few brief decades of noise, our advancing technology is making us quieter, not louder. So a simple response to the Fermi paradox is to assume that we are a good example of an advanced civilization, and that currently we would be unable to detect ourselves from any reasonable interstellar distance. And while there could be more technologically advanced civilizations out there, being more technologically advanced doesn't necessarily make you easier to detect. Mind you, our own technological advancement is going to make us much better listeners. The square kilometer array will give us the capacity to detect signals equivalent to our post-World War II narrowband radar from several hundred light years away. That's still only a small proportion of the whole Milky Way galaxy, but it will be a big step forward in the search for extraterrestrial intelligence, perhaps a big enough step to put the whole Fermi paradox to bed once and for all. As to what we should be listening out for, we can only guess at how many Earth-like planets, that may harbour Earth-like civilizations are out there. To date, we've been able to identify Earth-sized planets around red dwarfs, but these are not likely candidates for harbouring a complex ecosystem, let alone a technological civilization. We don't yet have the ability to identify the much more likely candidates, which are Earth-sized planets around G-type stars, like the Sun. It's thought that out of the several hundred billion stars in our galaxy, there are 7 or 8 billion G-type stars, and we could say there's up to 27 billion somewhat Sun-like stars, if we include the adjacent F and K types as well. On that basis, it's speculated that the Milky Way might contain some 50 million Earth analogues, and perhaps another 25 million Pandora analogues, where Pandoras are exomoons orbiting gas giants that are orbiting within their star's habitable zone. But given everything we've covered in this podcast, perhaps the only way an interstellar conversation is ever going to start is if someone deliberately tries to get themselves noticed. Here at Cheap Astronomy, we feel confident that Earth could start broadcasting "Yoo-hoo, over here" messages without the slightest risk of any warmongering aliens warping over here at faster than the speed of light, because, you know, physics. But for anyone to actually hear us from more than 5 or 10 light years out, they would need some very sensitive equipment, and they'd probably have to be in line of a beamed transmission we'd sent to have any hope of distinguishing our signals from the routine background noise of the universe. For the moment, since it doesn't look like we'll be sending such a beamed transmission anytime soon, it's likely that any aliens out there are struggling with their own versions of Fermi's paradox.
This is the end bit.
So, there you go. Sometimes the best way to solve a problem is not to solve it, but redefine it. So in this case, it's not that no one's out there or that anyone is hiding. It's just that the natural course of technological evolution is to become silent and invisible. Alternatively, perhaps we are just the first ones in our neighbourhood to learn how to bang the rocks together, or there could just be some other reason we haven't thought of yet. But that's it for another episode of Dear Cheap Astronomy. If you've got a space science question, or you just want to redefine someone else's problem, why not write to cheapastro@gmail.com and we'll cut that Gordian knot for you. Thanks for listening. Steve Nerlich, Cheap Astronomy.